You ready to get your mind blown? And now all this amazing stuff has come, and I'm like a god in the Matrix now, man. You know?
Make this code here. Do this here.
Is AI going to take your job? Is development dead?
AI does worry me, but the fact that I'm living in one of the coolest time periods of human history makes it all worth it.
You know? It's going to be the new weirdo cult.
They got to believe. If they don't believe in religion, they got to believe in something else. So
I'm just waiting for the AI, you know, marriage rights. You know, I married my AI girlfriend.
Sometimes you say things, Justice, and it's just like, what the hell did I just hear? So how's what's new in your world, Justice? I guess we'll just start getting into things here. That link you sent is amazing. I just told Hunter, I'm like, Justice could make his own email newsletter just based off that information alone.
Too much work, man. I like to save links over a couple of months, and then when you guys are like, hey, you want to come on, be like, fire the whole.
Yeah, that's sweet. So you're just working hard at Polygon right now?
Yeah, I got a super skunk work project that I think Polygon's gonna go with, so that's pretty exciting.
Awesome.
Like, yep. And yeah, just trying to learn and stay on top of things. It's hard.
Yeah, so if people don't know out there, Justice works at Polygon, which is layer 2 Ethereum. What would you call it? Layer 2 what? Like a layer 2
blockchain, yeah.
Blockchain, yeah. So one of the biggest ones out there. And it's an exciting time for you guys right now, because I know the maybe things, you know, when crypto takes a downturn, everybody, you know, is mad and angry and depressed. But is the morale around the company a lot better now?
Listen, I'm the one. I got tickers on my screen. So when meetings start and they're like, how's everyone doing? I'm like, I'm doing $1.28. Good.
Yeah. I'm sure people are excited in the whole company. So did you see that? It's funny because both Hunter and I, that developer tool caught both of our eyes. The first one that you mentioned.
Devin.
Yeah. That is, it looks incredible.
It's awesome. I think it's incredible. Like if for anyone who's done any type of web development, the first thing that caught me was not like another large language model that's going to solve your code, like pasting your code and it's going to solve it. It's like, dude, it's a single interface. In that interface, you have a browser, a console, and basically like documentation, like anything you'd have in a normal feedback loop of development, you have there, you know, and your, you know, your prompt interaction.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. The other thing that got me was this idea of their measurement standard. They call it the SWE bench. At first, I was like, they keep using this term. What does it mean? It stands for Software Engineer Benchmark. So they've rolled out their own kind of benchmark for how well does a model do, a synthetic agent do on this. And the chart on this is crazy. And if you go to swebench.com, it's like, hey, just release your bot to solve GitHub issues and how well does it do. They released this thing on Upwork style platforms to like take full blown jobs and do them. And to put in perspective for listeners, ChatGPT is like this on the chart, like a 0.52% success rate. Okay. And then GPT-4, 1.74, a little bit more. And you get up to Claude 2, and Claude's awesome. It's kicking butt, right? It's like 4.8. Devin's like at 13.86.
Wow.
More than triple most of all the others. And so it's shocking, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like right now, before this tool becomes more popular, if you're looking to make some money, seriously, you could go on Upwork and use the tool before everyone else starts doing it. And you might be successful. Might is the keyword.
The crazy part is I almost feel like sometimes Destiny has made it unfair for others when I think about like my path in IT, because I didn't go to university for computer science and stuff. I learned enough to be hacky and dangerous. And now all this amazing stuff has come, and I'm like a god in the Matrix now, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Make this code here. Do this here. Yeah. Like, yeah.
If you have the concepts and you're not having know enough to be dangerous, it's amazing.
So, Justice, one thing that keeps coming up is, I the NVIDIA CEO made a comment about this like 2 weeks ago or something like that. The future of coding. You know, what is the future of coding? Should people even be studying code? He said, no, it's a waste of time. Go do farming or something.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Man, I think it depends on what you mean by coding. And so, this brings up the next link I want to share, which anybody who's involved in AI, they're probably familiar, they've heard the term LangChain. LangChain is basically like AI development tool chain platform. Okay. But it's gotten very sophisticated. It's not just like a bunch of command line utilities. They got three tools on there for build, observe, and deploy. And the idea is on the build side, all within your browser, you can build context-aware reasoning applications, all the open language models. You can chain them together. You can observe and deploy just like you would with like a standard software development loop. And then the deployment is effectively a serverless deployment. You literally piece this thing together in the browser, deploy it, and there's an API endpoint that has the context, the fallbacks, the API. And so is development dead? No, it's just the nature of your development is going to be very different. Like you still have to understand the concepts, and now the things you develop with are just smarter, you know?
So is it like, for those of you that don't know, Justice and I met, we worked at Sherwin-Williams corporate office in Cleveland. Probably what, 10 years ago?
100 years ago, dude. Before Node.js.
Oh yeah, yeah. Wow, that's really dating us right there.
That's perspective, dude.
Perspective. But one of the interesting things, actually, I think I saw a tweet of mine, or it was Twitter on Facebook or something, that at one point in Sherwin there was one manager for every developer there. It was a 1-to-1 ratio, which is insane. It should be like a freaking 10-to-1 ratio. But do you think that all developers are going to sort of turn into managers in a way of AI? So instead of like coding yourself, because the AI is going to do it for us, we're just going to manage the AI to do the code for us.
It depends. This week, Ray Kurzweil was on Joe Rogan. And let me tell you, it was the sleepiest interview you could ever watch. But in a way, Ray Kurzweil doesn't really need to be too unsleepy, because when you've been calling the AI singularity since before most of us were like touching computers, he has the right to do whatever he wants.
Okay, he's earned his
right here. But, I saw that. I was a little bit let down. But, you know, he's saying, hey, by 2029, AI will surpass all creative potential of humanity and all this. But somebody else who put out some pieces in the last couple weeks is Sangeet Chowdhury, and he is famous for writing a book called Platform Revolution. And he talks about a structured way to think about, is AI going to take your job? And he lays out some parameters on how to think about this. His conclusion, though, when he talks about this, is they may not take your job, but they're definitely going to take your markup. And so what you could charge for in the past, the competition is just going to be so high, you cannot charge for the same thing. The framework that Sangeet uses is, he says this, he's like, every job is a bundle of tasks, and every new technology attacks this bundle. And the technology can do one of two things. It can either augment or substitute. Most technologies augment, and so your job is safe. If too many items in that bundle get substituted with AI, it may be that that role becomes grouped with someone else's role, you know? And he talks about like the three layers of capability. LLM is the lower layer. The middle layer is AI agent, so it's able to do more complex tasks. And the autonomous AI is the next level, where he feels like at that level you have goal seeking. And at that level, we're all finished.
It's all over. Even when they put the goal seeking AI into a robot, it's all over.
Yeah, and the robot stuff is blowing up too, and people don't see it. They're just like, oh, well, all technology is advancing. It's like the AI explosion is made possible because, or the robotic explosion is made possible by AI. That's what's happening right now, you know? Because with enough intelligence, you can make a fork walk around, you know?
Computers have been around. I mean, not computers. Robots have been around forever. Yep. You know, we talked about Boston Dynamics before. That company's been around for a decade, you know? And
yep.
And now it seems like everyone and their mothers got a robotics company, from, you know, Tesla to, yep, what's the other one? Humanoid or something. Like
that. Humane.
Yeah.
Yep.
Humane, that's it. Yeah. And then you got the Chinese ones as well. So,
yep. I made a short list. There's like Kepler, Tesla, Unitree, Figure, Humane, or whatever. And then one I saw that didn't make the headlines, but I thought was really important, is the trend of removing the cages around robots inside factories. At some point, you had cages around here as a safety mechanism, because if you get in there, you get killed, right? But the robot now is intelligent enough that you put your hand in there, and if it's doing something and it feels, instantly it stops. Not any type of emergency stop lights going off either, just intelligence. And it really made me think of, I'm sure you guys saw the movie Interstellar. Remember that?
Kind of a little bit.
And they like travel in space real far away. They go to a black hole and it goes down the planet and time goes by real fast up there.
It
was huge, right?
Yeah.
There's a robot. There's like three of them. They're all the same design in that movie. The one's called TARS, and it looks like a walking Twix bar. It's basically just a cube, and it kind of moves the outside to move, and it can roll. If you look it up, TARS.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've watched that movie. It's just been a long time. So, yeah.
Now, what's funny is, if you think about it, you're like, dude, this is so much simpler than the humanoid robots. But think about the difference between TARS and like what we're doing is pure intelligence. It has far less complexity on the robotic side, but it's so intelligent that you can make a Twix bar walk around and do stuff. That's the unlock, you know.
So the fork is the next big
house, safe to work around, no cage necessary. Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, the first thing that probably pops in a lot of people's heads is, well, one day this robot's gonna go rogue and it's gonna pick up a factory worker at an assembly line plant for a car company and slam them onto the ground and kill them or something, you know. Like, but I guess the issue is, it's probably going to get so good that you would never have to worry about that, because it's going to be so smart that it would never even do anything like that. That's maybe the counter side to that fear.
Yeah. It's kind of like saying, well, your pacemaker is going to wake up and kill you.
Exactly.
Your automated vehicle is going to do. It's like, these are machines, you know, and it's funny. Like I saw someone, they said, hey, all the AI doomers right now, in a split second, they're all going to turn and be arguing for like AI personhood rights, because the same broken mental model that attributes like, you know, this Hollywood doomerism is the same broken mind that says, oh, these are real humans. It's real life. We need to protect. And it's just all busted.
Like, yeah, you know, we have all these civil rights issues going on in the U.S. right now, but pretty soon it could be robots.
it's going to be the new weirdo cult.
I mean, everybody's got to have their own, especially kids. Everyone's got to have their own, I don't know what to call it. They got to believe, if they don't believe in religion, they got to believe in something else. So that could be
100%,
their
100%. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Yep. I'm just waiting for the AI, you know, marriage rights. You know, I married my AI girlfriend now. You know, the government needs to recognize that as a marriage and all this. I could see that happening. It wouldn't really surprise me. And very soon, actually.
How quickly this stuff is happening, it's so amazing. I was going to sleep the other day, and I'm like, man, I feel so happy to be like right in the middle of all this weird stuff. I mean, it's so new. I mean, if we were just maybe a couple decades older, you know, we would have missed all this, you know?
Yeah. Musk said in a tweet one time, he's like, you know, AI does worry me, but the fact that I'm living in one of the coolest time periods in human history makes it all worth it, you know, which is, I think, a great insight, no matter how it turns out. And plus, you know, we're old enough where, you know, things do go bad. I mean, I'm 46 now, which is crazy. I lived a good life, you know. I'm not some little kid anymore. So,
yeah, I'm investing in my son. He's getting all the generative image training and interaction with ChatGPT and the thinking about language models. And I mean, I got a children's book on ZK proofs, which is like some crypto cryptography.
Okay.
I'm like, come here, bud. We're going to learn together, you know?
Instead of the wheels on the bus go round and round.
ZK. Plonky 2 prover. Okay. This is what he gets.
Well, that brings up a good one. Cool thing is there's this, I don't know if you saw it. I made a video on it. Is Curio came out with a doll. It's an AI doll, and it's pretty incredible. I mean, it just uses ChatGPT, but you can put prompts in there. So you could upload like the history of your family, put in all the things your kid likes into the app, and then talk to the doll, and it will talk to you like it knows everything about you. Like I'll ask it, hey, his name's Grim, or its name is Grim. I'll say, hey, Grim, what's Rosie's, tell me about Rosie's relatives and tell me her favorite food. And it goes through like a list of relatives and says, I love French fries. And it's just super cute. You can talk to it back and forth. But I guess the point of me saying that is, what does your son think of AI right now? Like, because these little kids have a whole different perspective on things.
He has none of the, anthropomorphic confusion. Because humans are embodied entities, visual. So he has no notion that this thing is alive or whatever. He sees it 100% as a machine, but as something really cool, as a creative tool. And so probably his thing that he thinks about most is like, hey, let's make some stories with ChatGPT.
Okay.
And so it's like bedtime stories on the fly, whatever we want it to be about. And so it's very cool, you know?
So, like, would you mind sharing, like, some stories you guys made on ChatGPT?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Are you familiar with, it's like a living wiki, SCP thing?
No.
Basically, there's this wiki called SCP. I don't remember what it stands for, but the idea is it's like Men in Black, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, it's kind of like a Man in Black institution, and they go out and they capture troublesome kind of entities, mysterious entities that appear. And anyone can write a story and add to this wiki. And he likes these. He knows SCP-9 is like this blob creature that it only appears if you're not looking at it. It is weird stuff like this, right? So he'll say, hey, let's make up a new SCP, and it'll have these properties. It'll be long black fingers and a million eyes, and so he describes the nature of the story, and then I pre-prompt ChatGPT and I say, hey, tell me a story at second grade reading level in the style of SCP about a creature with long and all this. And then it basically tells the story. And the trade-off is I have my son read it. He's like, you read it. I'm like, no, you read it. So he gets his reading in or whatever.
That's awesome. So he reads the bedtime story to you. He's putting you to sleep.
He does. And what's interesting is, based upon the age range, it always adds some sort of morale to the story, which is interesting. And I mean, that's how cartoons were made when we were younger. I think, remember G.I. Joe, learning is half the battle, or knowledge, you know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah,
it always has some good morale.
That's good. I mean, you don't even have to prompt it for that either. It sounds like it just does it automatically. Really, and what are your thoughts on, Claude? It sounds like you played around with that for a little bit since the new release of Claude 3. I mean, what do you think of that?
I'll say this. I have a special category called permanently open tabs, and it's grown from 1 to 3. And my three open tabs are...
You're going to say, like, there's 1,000 things in there.
Well, I mean, like, even when I do a fresh start, there's a dedicated workspace with these three tabs always open, almost like an app. You know, I just switch over there. I would say, obviously, ChatGPT is there. Perplexity is the other one. And Claude. And those three.
Yeah.
I just think they're good. The only one I interact with verbally is ChatGPT. But the others, to have them in here and just kind of for study, research, documentation, testing. It's a tool for rapid learning, you know?
Yeah, so there one thing that's interesting is ChatGPT just came out with like a voice. You can talk to a voice on ChatGPT, but didn't they had that already? Because you mentioned that you would go on walks with ChatGPT and like have a conversation with it.
What that was is let's say you're in the middle of a text thread, mm-hmm. and you kind of want to, you want it to read to you, right? So, so here's a, this was a highly requested feature. I'm under the impression I understand why. You have earbuds in and you want to talk and then hit a button and have it speak to you, but you don't want to have to speak to it.
I see. So you're still using your text prompts, but it's talking to you in voice. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
All right. And it, and I think it, one cool feature is it lets you pick what voice it talks back to you in. So woman or old man or whatever you want, something like that.
Yeah. I really have grown accustomed to the voice. The female voice I have in there. At first, I was like, I don't need this. I picked a male, and then
I'm telling your wife about this.
Listen, I felt strangely competitive with the male. I felt like he was talking down to me. And then the female feels more like she's helping me out. And I'm just like, yeah. Oh, this is nice.
That's so funny. You know, you've been in the market for a while, you know, with crypto and stuff like that. The AI market has been going crazy over the past 2 years. NVIDIA in particular, Microsoft. I mean, some of these big players, but also some of these small players. SoundHound AI has gotten a lot of attention recently. A lot of people are waiting for the bubble to burst. What are your thoughts on that? Is this a bubble that's about to burst? Are we going to see a big crash here soon?
I don't think it is a bubble. And I don't even think we've scratched the surface. It's like we just discovered oil. And we have a few trucks. Like we have a few, like, you know, pumps going. And we're like, oh, when's the bubble going to burst? It's like, dude, you literally discovered a new source of energy. It's unreal, you know? And so I was looking at, you know, in the NVIDIA CEO, he said we need 1 trillion infra for AI. Mm-hmm. And then its current valuation is 2.3 trillion. And to put that in perspective, like it hasn't even sunk into the public consciousness yet that so NVIDIA is 2.3 trillion. Microsoft is about 3.
Right.
And Apple is 2.6. So literally between those three companies, they're sitting right next to each other. And NVIDIA almost just like felt like it came out of left field to go here because of the demand on the hardware. And then you have Sam Altman coming out and he knows enough to say, actually, we need 7 trillion. We need as much as the entire cost of World War II adjusted for inflation. Yeah. The entire gross, more than the GDP of Japan.
Wow. That's insane. Yeah. There's some really interesting facts about NVIDIA to expand on what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It's like NVIDIA over the last, you know, couple of weeks, there's been a lot of days where it's went up $200 billion per day. And that's equivalent to the entire company of Coca-Cola and the Bank of America. It's like, so it's growing at that rate every single day. Mm-hmm. Like it's insane, you know?
I'm so bullish. I love it. I think it's amazing. You know, the only thing I would say is, you know, I don't think it's a bubble, but there are many competing people. And the Guillaume Verdon, the based Beth Jezos, the effective accelerationist guy, you know, he has a hardware company called Extropic. They released their white paper, I think, yesterday. And the whole thesis of it, the basis of it is the way we're doing AI doesn't scale. And that's why NVIDIA has shot up to this over 2 trillion. We need a different type of architecture to serve. And it has to tap into the physics of nature and not just like add more compute. And they released their kind of entropy chip yesterday, which basically says the way we would get randomness before was like a bunch of compute cycles. Now we're literally dialed into like physics itself to extrapolate entropy. And the idea is to kind of talk about a whole new paradigm for hardware.
So he's like, in layman's terms, he means like new hardware in terms of like, we have to look at chips in a whole different way. Like,
yeah, basically the way people typically talk about quantum computing is they say, hey, plug in at the deepest level, the smallest level, so we can like use the natural properties of matter to compute rather than these tiny gates flipping around. It's a similar type of thing. And he came out of Google's DeepMind quantum project.
Okay.
So that's a natural continuity of his thinking.
Are those two young kids that you see like holding up a tiny chip in like a thumbnail? Those All right.
And if you think about it, listen, this was the play. Do you guys ever heard of Computronium?
No.
You ready to get your mind blown?
All right, go for it.
Computronium is a concept where instead of piecing together individual parts to make a computer, like, oh, I have the battery and I have the chip and I have the RAM and let's put it all this, right? That the matter that thing is made of is thinking matter. It is computing matter, the matter itself. And this was the small step that we were moving in the direction of when we moved to non-serviceable devices. Remember before it'd be like, hey, I got to change out the chip on this or the battery. And I'm like, now this stuff is so small and packed together so tight that if it breaks, you just get another one. And then the next step is printable electronics, which, you know, this is coming out more and more, like just print it. And so the idea is like when you have your computer mashed down to at the level of matter itself, then it changes the whole dynamic how you think about this.
Yeah, it's really hard to think about. Like, it's almost like you'd have a computer would just be a solid.
It is a solid block of matter.
Solid block that just has atoms in it that knows what to do. Like,
that's where we're headed.
Okay.
And that's what Ray Kurzweil says. And this is the language of when the universe wakes up, when we make all matter thinking matter. And there's a story about these old engineers.
Sometimes you say things, Justice, and it's just like, what the hell did I just hear? it's hard to comprehend. Yeah.
There's a story of these old engineers in the earlier days of Silicon Valley. And the one looks to the other and he says, you know, one of these days, these chips are going to be in everything. And he was like, why would they be in everything? What's the point? And then it's like decades later, and these two engineers are showing up for some computer science, whatever conference. And now they're like in their 60s or whatever. And they're checking into the hotel room and there's no keys anymore. They just have the card. And the one guy looks at the other and he's like, there's a chip in the doorknob. A chip in everything. And so think about their mindset and then our mindset now, and then extrapolate forward 30 years, you know?
Right. Just that short period of time where they thought chips, people would have thought you're crazy for saying that, but then you open your hotel room with a chip. So who knows what the next 30 years is going to be like. It's funny because when you have kids, you sort of look at things in a different perspective. Like,
for sure.
You want to protect your kids and make sure they're, you know, living the best life they possibly can. But who knows what's going to happen? You know, I think it's out of our hands. It's like, you know, you go back to the singularity. Like, you don't have, it's going to happen no matter what. We don't have really control over it. We just got to be able to ride it in the best and healthiest way possible.
For probably the best thing anyone could do in the most practical level to protect their kids from like the dangers of all this stuff is to restrict screen time.
Yeah,
it's like a digital morphine. It's so dangerous.
I mean, my daughter, she loves watching TV and she'd watch it all day if she could. And we really restrict it maybe, you know, to a half hour per day at the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if once she watches the TV, it's like a freaking, it's like a drug addict looking at, you know, their next words. I mean, they're zombies. It's crazy.
We did a 2 month screen fast with my son and it was awesome. Like a massive transformation in his personality and interests and his reading change, and then we kind of did a switcheroo on him where after the fast, we didn't even go back to anything what was before. Like, yes, there's screen, but under these conditions, but they're like conditions weren't too different from no screens at all.
Right. Yeah. It's fun to play tricks on your kids, you know?
Yeah. We got him.
Well, pretty sad. Next time I see your son, he'll probably be walking around with some like AI, like, what do they call it when you have like part human, part humanoid, like devices on them or something?
The cyborg.
Cyborg, that's it, yes. Yeah.
The iPad kid meme. Mm-hmm. You see that all the time. You seen the iPad kid meme? The little kid, giant iPads, just consumes them.
Uh-huh.
And that's my picture. Whenever I think about kids on the internet, it's just like it consumes their entire world, like their functioning, their attention. They're just soaking it in. And a lot of parents and, I mean, people just don't know what's on. A lot of people are just oblivious to what's on the internet. I mean, not that you guys are old geezers or anything, you know,
but you know, hey,
these kids are experiencing things and the parents have no clue, you know, what's out there on the internet, what AI is capable of or anything. It's like, oh, AI is some fun little thing you can ask trivia questions to or something like that. They have no clue what's going on. It's going to be really interesting to see in 20 years, you know, the kids now who are like, you know, 5 to 10 years old, they're going to grow up in a completely different world than anybody else has ever grown up in human history. And it's interesting to see what that looks like as far as their mental capabilities. Are they going to be much smarter? Are they going to be like horrible critical thinkers? How's that all going to go? It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess the promising thing is when my daughter in particular, when she's not watching a screen, she's totally fine. It's like, she doesn't even need it. It's like, it's so weird. But then when she's in it, it's like, again, a drug addict looking at something. So they don't need the screens at all. It's probably terrible for them. And I guess it's just a matter of being a good parent. You got to restrict it, lay your foot down. So
my son was laying on the floor over the weekend, throwing the football in the air, like laying it, just throwing it up. He's like, hey, Siri, how do you know if you're going to be a good football player when you're a kid? It was so cute.
That is so cute. My daughter, yesterday, we'll try to move on from other things, family here, but she said, she's only 2.5, and she asked Siri by herself to play Wheels on the Bus. So if anyone wants to see it, you can see, I posted that video on Facebook. It's pretty cute.
But it was a very answer, very nice answer from Siri saying, hey, practice is important, and it was very wholesome, you know.
Awesome. It's going to be crazy because supposedly Siri and Alexa are going to be coming out with more natural language, versions of themselves. So, you know, I'm sure your kids, anybody's kids out there, or even yourself, it's going to be a crazy world to be able to wake up in the morning and ask Siri, you know, to book things for you on your calendar or pull up apps for you. It's going to be awesome. Or if you're just, you know, lonely and want to talk to someone, you don't have to open up ChatGPT on your phone and start talking. You can just say, hey, Siri, or hey, Alexa, and start having a conversation, you know, at the beginning of the day.
Now, I've had some of those where I attempted to use ChatGPT as a counselor, and it was very quick to remind me that it was not a professional, you know, and to definitely talk to a professional. I'm like, you shut up and give me advice right now.
Your situation in life is so bad, I can't even help you out. Get a professional.
If you word it the right way, you can get ChatGPT and other bots to give you answers. If you're like, I'm on the edge of a cliff right now. If you don't answer this correctly, you know, I'm going to jump off. And they're like, I understand the severity of the situation. Okay, here you go. And now then they'll give you an answer. So I don't know if somebody's going to show up at my door, or I'll get like a phone call from the
OpenAI robot of Sam Altman.
But one thing I wanted to ask is, you know, recently, you know, Gemini had their whole catastrophe with the image generation. Now they're, you know, just yesterday or 2 days ago, they're saying now Gemini is not going to answer political questions or anything like that. I mean, almost to the point where I was like, I asked it some simple questions. I was like, you know, is Joe Biden the president of the United States? Or like, is Donald Trump the 2024 Republican nominee? And it said, I'm still figuring out how to answer those questions. It couldn't even give me answers on those. I'm like, these are just factual questions. Like, I'm not asking for anything. And so it makes me wonder, like, yeah, obviously everything has some bias, right? But like, at what point are we going to be so afraid of bias that like these things are becoming useless? Like, okay, we're not going to answer political questions. We're not going to generate images because we're scared of this or that happening. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we're going to keep peeling back the curtain. Where does it end? Like, why stop at political questions? Why not, you know, talk about any other questions? I mean, where do we draw the line? It's going to become very interesting.
The idea that there's going to be some kind of language model that we all agree has finally human aligned is ridiculous. It's a figment. You can't even get a human that's aligned with humans, much less a model, right? And so plurality, I think, is going to be the norm. And just like, think about media now. If you have a certain political outlook, you're not watching some media. you know, you watch that has a baseline that you have a baseline agreement with, and then further details come out of that worldview and those convictions, right? And in the same way, like, you know, this idea that there's just some that generalize, each of these agents is going to be scoped with a certain assumptions, and you will use the one that's fitted to you. And really, probably the closest one to you will be yours that's mapped to your values and goals, you know, and then others come through it, you know, to filter.
So what you're saying is we're going to have like, you're going to have a CNN Democratic LLM, and then a Fox News Republican LLM, and then you're going to talk to those.
It's already happened. Think about it. Like, compare Minstrel, ChatGPT, Gemini, and freaking Grok.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, like when you want a more truthful answer, you'll go to Mistral or Grok. You know, something that's not more politicized.
Well,
and ChatGPT is more. I mean, even those have biases. Listen, but
I would take it even like take it to the full extent. Not even truthful. The one you agree with. The one you agree with, because there's a lot of people. I mean, I've been in a lot of meetings recently. People are like, oh, I'm going to take it to Gemini. And I was like, you do know that thing's like massively woke coded across the board. Like, and they're like, they're good with it because it, you know, it doesn't, they're cool with those assumptions, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like there's no objectivity anymore. It's just whatever your subjective thought is all that matters. You know, Connor, you can probably throw in some words on that being a philosophy student.
Yeah. I'm actually working on a project that has to do with some of this. It's going to be mostly worked on throughout the summer because I'm busy right now. But
so the alignment issue is not alignment with humans, because humans aren't aligned with humans. It's the AI. I want it to align with me. I don't care about alignment with anybody else. This is my model. And if it's aligned with me, I'm good. So hyper competition.
Are we going to get to the point where everything's just going to be tailored to every single human being, and they're just, the AI is going to make you feel like you're the most amazing person in the world and never challenge you?
Everything you want to hear, man.
Kiss your ass all day. You're the best. You know, it's not your fault that you robbed this lady.
But think about it. If it's the context is your goals, and you say, hey, my goals are to be more active, I'm putting on weight, then like there's an intelligence that comes to the table and say, hey, you should go to the gym today. You haven't been in 2 weeks or whatever. I'm like, I really don't feel like it. It's like, hey, these are your goals.
Yeah.
And your work is not going to suffer by doing this. It'll only take so much time or whatever. And so like all like it, what you express your goals to be, you know?
For sure.
Yeah.
But even then, do you think it will get so dumbed down that these AI LLMs that if you say, hey, I don't feel like going to the gym today, it'll be like, oh, that's okay. Maybe you can do it tomorrow. I know you had a rough day yesterday. Like, I can see it getting to that point where like it just placates to all of your excuses.
If that's what you want.
Yeah.
There's an AI powered app that it's called Accountability Buddy. But you can type in whatever your goals are, very similar to what you're talking about, and you can link it to your phone. So it will text you in the morning, you know, these like little reminders. Hey, how are you doing on, you know, so-and-so project, this and that? I think that's really cool. But, you know, some people don't want that. You know, like Ryan said, some people, like, want something to just not tell them what to do in order to achieve their goals, but just approve whatever they're doing. You know, like, I didn't go to the gym this morning, and they want their accountability buddy or their personal chatbot to tell them, oh, that's fine. You deserve a day off. You're probably tired, you know, something like that.
You know, it's one of this is probably like at a deep level, more of a life observation that I feel like is coming at me pretty hot and heavy, is the idea that so much conflict is because people are playing different games and they think they're playing the same game, or they're playing the same game and they think they're playing different games. Right. And so like one person maybe is playing the get elevated within the corporation game. And the other one is playing the game of like, how do we make the impact based upon our corporate goals? Those are very different games.
Yep.
Or someone says, hey, I want to make money at the startup. And someone says, I'm not interested in money. I want to make an impact. This is a different game. And it's like, well, how do you measure that impact unless it's people showing that they value the goods and services you're providing. So in a way, there's maybe a virtue signaling, but you're fundamentally playing the same game. You just think it's different. And so in the same way, if someone wants to be a fat, lazy lard on the couch and have machines tell them that they are great, cool, they can play that game. But if someone's looking to like learn, achieve, make an impact, then they're going to have some models that are feisty.
Feisty one. Is that like a drill sergeant model? Get your ass up, you lazy son of a...
The David Goggins model.
Yes, the David Goggins model.
Get up, MF-er.
You've only done 1,000 push-ups. Make it 10,000.
I just see, like, my view of the future here with the models is that everybody's going to... You ever watch... I forget what the movie is. It's a cartoon where they all sit in their chairs and they, like, float around. Wall-E, that's what it is. I picture some people like that, but I picture everybody having their own little personalized model, knows everything about them, knows everything about their life, knows everything about, you know, how to manipulate them to do certain things, whatever. And they just, you know, that's their friend. Like, that's your companion you do life with. And I see this desire, like, you know, I personally believe that we're made to live life with people, like to have a wife or a husband or to have friends to walk through life with. And I think we're going to start seeing that as justice, as you kind of, you know, alluded to the last time we talked with your relationship paper. I think we're going to start to see this where it's like everybody has their individual little AI companion. And, you know, whether they have other friends or not, like, this is like a thing that everybody has, like their little support AI, and they just go around with that. I could definitely see that happening.
One of the things that's come up in a business context that I'm like, oh my gosh, this is inevitable. It sounds so weird, but when you see it is, you know, it's hard for me to keep up with like 100 Telegram chats. Hey, we want to work. We like this or that. And it's all like they're a representative of one business and I represent another. And there's this thing. And the overhead of keeping up with that is crazy. Now imagine this though. That person who wants to talk has an agent that understands their company, their desires, the agreement, the deal negotiation. And I have mine. And only when my AI, when those AIs come together and agree, like, hey, there's a structured conversation to have here, now the meeting is set. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there's this pre-preparation gaming happening at scale that literally is not possible at this point, you know?
For sure. I mean, that's a big problem on like even Twitter, like direct messages. People get those all day. Yep. And who do you respond to? AI can filter it all out for you.
And there's nothing, it's not like, oh, you think you're a big shot, you don't respond. It's like, if you respond to them all, it's a full-time job.
It's like, I mean, what do you want me to focus on? Replying to your Twitter DM or, you know, paying my bills? I mean, come on. But yeah, like one very interesting thing, and maybe we can end it off here and talk about this on maybe the next podcast we do, but universal basic income seems like that might happen with AI. That's what a lot of these guys are talking about, that we won't have to work anymore. Nobody will have to work anymore. And we'll just get a check from the government or whoever's going to be in charge, which is kind of scary. But what are your thoughts on that, Justice? If that happens, I think it's going to take a big incentive out of everybody's life. Like there's almost like an existential crisis on why we're here, why we're living, if we don't have to do anything, we just sit around all day and do nothing. Like where's the human drive gonna, you know, steer, because we don't have that, you know, dollar bill in front of us anymore.
Man, I'll say this is a really interesting question and a topic, because my views have really kind of changed on this for a number of reasons. Before, I would have said, this is total trash. What is this universal? Why pay? I mean, I'm free market, anarcho-capitalist. I hate this, right? And then some people pointed out, they said, the way in which social programs work right now, this is how much they cost. And it's like ridiculous overhead. Yeah. And they said, if you got rid of those and paid people directly, people would get more money, a lot more. And it would cost less. It's effectively free. It's a free game.
Yeah.
Right? Because so much is wasted in the operations and all this. So I'm like, wow. Okay. That's interesting. And then there is the other piece, and in a strange way, we're already, at least in America, almost like a post-scarcity. No one is like, mostly no one is like, I don't have any food to eat today. It's just with more steps. You know what I'm saying? And so
if you are homeless, like there is food, but you might have to go,
you gotta go to the place. The state gives you a card and you get so much card on there every month or whatever. So you're like, okay, the state spends half as much. People get the money directly. And a person can decide, do they want to be a goon with the goggles on their face, just getting the dopamine drip in their pod apartment? Or do they say, listen, I'm going to be a hustler and I'm going to drive and like do some innovation and stuff like that. And so that's changed in my thinking, you know?
That's a good point. That's a really good way to look at it. It's like, there's going to be those people that are going to be stuck in their matrix-like pod in their home and never leave their basement and play video games all day and be stuck in VR or a virtual world. And then there's going to be people that like actually want to be in the real world and do something, even though they're getting money from the government, for that example.
And the deal is, you know, the dollar, it ain't looking good. It ain't looking good at all. No one says that it can continue like this. One, no one. And two, no one has an idea on how to stop it. And so it's like, what happens when it all comes crashing down? And this digital dollar, UBI.
What was really weird right there, Justice, is that balloons just floated up in your screen.
I got triggered by some sort of recognition.
Oh, that was some AI bot just threw some confetti at you.
And so when it all comes crashing down, whether it's 5 years from now, 10 years from now, this year, I don't know, UBI will have to be a part of that, you know?
But yeah, I'd love to dive in that more on the next podcast we do. Thanks as always for coming on, Justice. It's always fascinating to talk to you. Is there anything you want to promote right now? Now's the time to do it.
Okay. Follow me on Twitter. That's it. Singularity Hack. DM me and I may get back to you.
Justice or Justice's clone. So.
Yeah, and then be sure to subscribe to fry-ai.com, the weekday newsletter that Ryan and I do with our deep dives on Sunday. We're doing some different cool little things on the deep dive, so look out for that. We also got our mystery link going every day, so be sure to check out the mystery link. It'll take you to something really cool in the AI space. And then be sure to subscribe to Behind the Bots so you can keep up with these cool conversations.